Ethel Trollope, it's really good to be talking to you, especially as you're going to be at our Biz News conference. We call it BNC4 because it's our fourth episode, and that's at the end of August. And you and I are going to have what is called a fireside chat. So we're going to find out more about you then. But I thought as a little taster, we could have a conversation now and also look at the interesting news that's going on in Gqeberha. Have I got the pronunciation right?
Alec, close, but no cigar. Gqeberha.
Oh, siyabonga. Okay, we got that. I can't wait to introduce you to my friend Mick Goss, who, like you, is a boy from rural Eastern Cape. He's as fluent as you are. Is this something that guys grow up with in the Eastern Cape?
Alec, I think so. It's quite unusual. You know, I've even known in families where one son speaks Xhosa and the other one doesn't really speak it very well. So I think you need to have some kind of affinity for languages. But certainly in my generation and before, you know, young boys that lived in the rural areas spent their lives growing up with young black kids, either on the farms or near a trading store or in the nearby community. Unfortunately, things did change a little bit sort of in the late 90s when there was a lot of uncertainty about what was happening in the country. People were worried about security. So instead of leaving their kids at home to have a blissful sort of fearless life, people started carting their kids around with them all the time. But I personally grew up, if it wasn't on my nanny's back, it was playing with her kids. And I had this most unbelievably carefree life where I literally ingested Xhosa and spoke Xhosa before I spoke my own language. I don't want to say it's an attribute, but to be able to speak a language, understand the vernacular, and to be able to impart my sentiments in the vernacular and in an idiom, appropriate idiom, has made life very easy for me, or much easier, especially in politics. But certainly in my farming career and everyday life, I think it's important if you can speak somebody else's language that you speak to them in that language. It's a sign of respect, and it does garner a tremendous amount of mutual respect.
I see that you studied in Pietermaritzburg. Was that the famous BSc Agri degree?
Yeah, you know, that was one of the worst decisions I ever made in my mind. It wasn't even BSc Agri. It was just a cop-out choice of a B Agri degree, Agri Management. I spent too much time with my Sidara mates, and I should really have done something much more significant. I regret now that I never studied law. I think I have a great passion for law and language even. And, that's one of the regrets that I have. I should have taken university life a lot more serious, and I didn't.
Yeah, I guess as a career decision to become a lawmaker, which is what politicians are, then law would have been, with hindsight, the right choice.
Well, you know, it's sad because it's in our family, it's two generations that didn't get to practice something that they really had a passion for. My grandfather was starting to study law when his two brothers were killed, one in the First World War and one in a rebellion at a place called Lutzputz up in the Northern Cape. So he had to go back and farm. While I was at university, I knew that I was going to farm. I had a passion for farming. I wanted to farm. That's all I wanted to do at the time. So I really didn't concentrate on my studies when I should actually have just gone with my heart and studied and then gone back and farmed. It would have been, you know, not much different. But that's history, and there's a lot of water that's flowed under the bridge since then.
You were born in Bedford. That's real farming territory. Do you still live there? Do you still, or if not, then do you visit the farm often?
Alec, I was born in Bedford. Yeah, I was a sixth generation born on our family farm, on the same farm. And then I got involved in politics in the early 90s and was eventually elected to the legislature in 1999. And from there, I used to commute on weekends to our family farm where I'd been farming full time. I was then farming part time on weekends, and it was very unfair, I think, on my staff and on my family, because my staff were ending up working long weeks. While I was away, they were working, and when I was back on the weekends, we were working. And then ultimately, we had to take a decision as a family between my dad. I'd bought the farm from my dad, and we'd had a sort of payoff agreement. But I wasn't farming full time, and my son really wasn't passionate about farming. So we sold our family farm in 2005 so that I could concentrate on doing what I was doing at the time and not sort of be spread-eagled between two occupations.
And it's been quite a career that you've had, especially now. And that's the part I'd love us to go to in just a moment. But before we get there, Gqeberha and its water issue. That's very much in the news around the country. What's happening there? Is there any upside?
Oh, there's a tremendous upside, Alec. I think the water situation in Nelson Mandela Bay is not unique. I think there are many towns and cities across the country that are facing potential day zero. What makes Nelson Mandela Bay very unique is that it has an augmentation system. Water from the Harip Dam that originally comes from the Lesotho Highlands makes its way through the Harip Dam, through a series of tunnels and canals and rivers, and ends up in Kirkwood or Addo. And then from Addo, it's pumped to Nelson Mandela Bay. So if I could just do a quick geography alignment, the western part of the city is fed by the catchment area, the dams in the catchment area. And the dams in our catchment area are in a really water-shy area, which makes it very difficult. If you have a prolonged drought, then you run out of water in those dams, as we are doing right now. The upside of that is that when it does rain in those areas, because it's very steep, the countryside is steep and rocky, you get very quick runoff. So the western side of the city is supplied by the dams in the west, and the eastern side of the city is supplied now by water from Nooitgedacht scheme, which is essentially Harip Dam water. And there's enough water coming from the east to service the whole city. So it's unlikely that this city will ever run out of water. Well, the Harip Dam can run out of water. We know that. It's been very close to that before. But as long as there's water in the Harip Dam, Nelson Mandela Bay will have water. The big challenge has been to complete the Nooitgedacht system, which is 3 years behind, 3 if not 4 years behind, because of poor management, bad contract management, non-payment of contractors, really just a diabolical mess, and that has been overseen by the Amatole Water Board. So that system should have been completed years ago. It hasn't been. But there's also the issue of reticulating water across the city. So at the moment, water can get to about 60% of the city from Nooitgedacht, but the rest of the 40% depends solely on the water from our catchment area, which the water is running out fast. Fortunately, it was a bit of rain 2 weeks ago, and the dams have gone up by about 2.5%, but that just sets off day zero for the parts of the city that are completely reliant on dam water.
And who lives in the west? Is this a constituency that supports the ANC, and in other words have contributed to, well, for the rest of us, the insanity that's been going on in the politics there?
Not really, Alec. Let me tell you, so it's part of a place now called Kariga, which used to be Utene, and Kwanabuke. They were the first areas that will run out of water. So Kariga and Kwanabuke will run out of water first. And then you have places like Sea View, Warmer, Summerstrand, parts of Summerstrand. So all the areas in the west. So it's part of those areas support the DA or other opposition parties, and sort of up until recently, certainly Kwanabuke and big parts of Kariga have supported the ANC. So I don't think it has any real political alignment, but the reality is that is if you have people that are incompetent, that don't do their jobs properly, and they don't set a lot of store by maintaining infrastructure, which has been the Achilles heel of the ANC government, especially unseen infrastructure. You know, I see government working sporadically on overhead power lines and some potholes and that kind of thing. But when it comes to unseen infrastructure maintenance, like sewerage and pipelines, water pipelines that are under the ground, they have been notoriously bad at doing that. And then when you neglect it long enough, you run into trouble. And the biggest trouble is in Nelson Mandela Bay, we lose up to between 36 and 40% of our water to non-revenue losses. That means either theft or leakages or poor maintenance. And I mean, that's a travesty. If we could just sort that out, we wouldn't be anywhere near day zero.
Ciao. You mentioned the DA. You were once the chairman of the federal chairman of the DA. You were the opposition leader in parliament of the DA. You were a DA member for decades. And yet you've switched, you've left the party and joined Action SA. there must have been a lot of soul searching and thought that went into that decision.
Yeah, you know, Alec, 38-year association, direct association with the DA and its predecessor parties. 25 of those years, I was an elected representative, and as you said, I held various positions in that party. Completely dedicated and loyal to the cause. It included a lot of sacrifice, too. I mean, not that I'm the only person who's ever sacrificed for politics, but I know personally what the sacrifices were for that kind of dedication and loyalty. But, you know, I've always regarded myself primarily as a farmer, somebody who cares for the land, somebody who cares for the community I lived in. That's what defines me. And then I got drawn into politics because I came from a politically orientated family, but it was primarily to serve my community. So I've always regarded myself as a conviction politician rather than a career politician. And I had to get to a point in my career in politics where I had to make decisions. And I made those decisions based on conviction, and I had no idea what I was going to do the next day. I remember, you know, reading a book that Tony Leon wrote about my decision. And I want to tell you, it was traumatic to leave a party with an association that long. And I didn't just simply go to another political party. I had 2 years completely out of politics. I had no idea that I would ever get involved in politics again. But I remember Tony Leon wrote this book, and John Steenhuisen said that I had quit politics and he couldn't understand why I'd quit, and that I held all the aces and Steenhuisen held a pair of twos. And I spoke to Tony Leon and I said, well, you know, essentially, I'm very pleased that I was able to do that, because that illustrates what principle is and what conviction is. It's very easy to fold a pair of twos because that's the prudent thing to do. But to fold all the aces when you hold them in your hand shows that you have lost your conviction. And I lost my conviction for many reasons, Alec, and I really don't want to launder dirty washing in public about my association with the DA. But there were two main reasons, and I've said those publicly, and I'm happy to do it again. First of all, I thought the DA treated Musi Maimane really badly and unfairly, because we went back by 1.3 percentage points in the 2019 election. And that was the first time the DA had ever gone back in an election. So he was made to take responsibility for that. And I remember saying to the federal executive that Musi's failure is our collective failure. We all elected to make him leader. And if he didn't succeed, we must take some responsibility for that. So that was the first reason. And the second reason was, you know, Helen Zille had retired from politics. She'd had a very illustrious career, a great mayor, great premier. And she said that she would never go back into politics. But the DA re-elected her back into politics. And I thought that that was very short-sighted, because she has been making more and more polarizing statements and utterances. And that's the last thing a party that wants to be an alternative government needs, is to be polarized, where one of our greatest challenges in the DA was always the fact that we were referred to as a white party and we needed to garner support from all communities. So those are the two main reasons. I said, well, if that's the direction that my party wants to go in, to scapegoat our first black leader and then to bring Helen Zille back into the leadership position, senior leadership position in the party, then my party is going in a direction that, you know, I don't align with. And essentially, the art of politics is to change people's minds. And that's what I've been doing for decades in the DA, to change people's minds. And essentially, I changed my mind, because I said, this is not the direction that I believe this party should be going in. I infamously said to Helen Zille, there's a time to go and a time to come and a time to go. And when she was elected into that position, I said, well, clearly it's my time to go. And I went painfully, but I left because I lost my conviction.
But you've not joined Herman Mashaba, who incidentally was the first opening keynote speaker at our very first conference. So we had him there. You've mentioned Musi Maimane. He was at the second conference. We had Helen at the third conference. So many of the people you're talking about, the personalities, are known to our community. How easy or difficult was it to join Action SA and the Herman Mashaba project?
Yeah, look, it was very difficult, Alec. I remember I left the DA in October. I resigned my positions of leadership in the DA in October, and then finally resigned at the end of December after I had concluded some important things in Nelson Mandela Bay. And Herman Mashaba called me in December 2019 and said he'd like to see me in January. I knew what he wanted to see me about. And I said yes out of politeness. I said we could meet. And then for some reason or other, we never met. Herman couldn't make it. And then COVID came. And 2 years, you know, just went by in the bat of an eyelid. And I got on with what I was doing. I was running a consultancy business. I was consulting with the objective to bridging the divide between the private sector and the public sector. Government doesn't work well with the private sector, and the private sector doesn't work well with government because they don't trust them and a whole lot of things. And then I ended up working with some black citrus growers, and farming is my real passion, and it was an incredible experience working with those guys. And then 2 years later, we had a meeting, and he basically asked me to come and help him save South Africa and to fix the Eastern Cape. And I basically said to Herman Mashaba, look, I've had enough. And he looked at me and he said, have you done enough? And, you know, it was one of those amazing questions that I knew immediately what the answer was. And it was like he'd stuck a knife in my heart, because I live in a province where we have 48% unemployment. The ANC has the greatest support in the Eastern Cape of all the other provinces. We really are a maladministered province that has incredible opportunities and potential, but it never reaches that. So I then said, well, clearly I haven't done enough. And then we concluded some arrangements about me joining him. And, you know, Alec, I never ever thought I'd belong to any other political party. But for the first time in my political lifetime, active political lifetime, I feel an extraordinary feeling of being a South African. You know, for the first time, I don't have to explain to people that, you know, I'm white, but I really have the interest of the majority of South Africans at heart and the country. I don't have to do any of that. We all come from different political parties in Action SA. We're a new political party, but we are new people. I mean, we're a group of people that have been politically reborn and that said we've had enough of where we come from. We want something new. We want to do something different. And that is essentially why it's so exciting to be in this new political organization. And I think that we can actually achieve critical mass, because you're going to need critical mass to dislodge the ANC. It doesn't help being a 10 or 15% party. It just plays right into the hands of the ANC. You need to get critical mass of political support across all communities if you're going to dislodge the ANC.
How far along that project do you feel that Action SA is at this point?
Well, you know, essentially for the first year and a half, they were only really active in Gauteng and KZN. And I thought that that was quite prudent of Herman Mashaba, because, you know, if he tried to represent himself and his party in all nine provinces at the outset, I don't think he would have been able to deliver. And I use the example of if you discover some amazing product that people love eating and you offer it to Woolworths or Pick n Pay or one of those chain stores, and everyone loves it and snaps it up and wants more of it tomorrow, but you don't have the capacity to provide it, then, you know, people will forget about that product. So he contested six municipalities, three in Gauteng and three in KZN. And all six of those municipalities, the ANC is below 50%. Action SA is in government in all six of them. All have passed their budgets. Life goes on well there, or reasonably well. And Action SA is the sixth biggest party after contesting six of the 260-odd municipalities. I think that's quite an incredible achievement. I've only been working here for about 4 months in the Eastern Cape, and already I've seen signs that I've never experienced before in my previous political life of across-the-board support in deep rural areas like Engobo and Bizana, where we launched our first branches, and in the metro city. So I'm excited. 2 years is never enough to set yourself up in a major election. But heaven knows, South Africa needs Action SA to do well in the next election.
Is it in your thinking at Action SA that there will be sufficient votes from the non-ANC parties to eject the ruling party? And taking it one step further, that what we've seen happening in many of the metropolitan areas now, where you can get a coalition together that could rule effectively?
Look, Alec, there's no doubt in my mind that that's exactly what's going to happen. If you look at the 2021 election results, the ANC were brought below 50% across the board. You know, people like Kgalema Motlanthe have said that the ANC will lose power. Just about every single political analyst that you have, and we've got some good and we've got some really bad political analysts in this country, have said that the ANC will lose. And the ANC are doing everything in their power to make sure that they do that themselves. I mean, with this Eskom debacle, the, you know, the president, Palapala farm gate effort, all of those kind of things. And every one of their conferences is a shambles. The ANC is tearing itself apart. So I have no doubt that people's experience of the ANC and the fact that there's ANC fatigue across all communities and that the ANC is tearing itself apart, that they will be below 50%. The question is how far below 50% they'll go, because the greatest challenge is that they might go below 50% but still be able to cobble together a really bad coalition, which will not be good for South Africa. So South Africans need the ANC to lose badly. And I mean, if I can quote Antonio Gramsci, who says the old must die before the young are born. And if you don't understand what that means in sort of farming parlance, if in a forest of trees, all the young trees bear fruit, but that fruit doesn't germinate until the old trees have died. And that's what needs to happen in South African politics. The ANC has to die before we can bring a new political dispensation to life in this country.
The skeptics or critics, I suppose, cynics rather, I suppose you could call them, are saying, but the ANC will do what other liberation parties in other parts of the continent have done and steal the election if it looks like they might lose power. Is there much credence to that thought?
Absolutely. Absolutely, there's credence to that. The ANC have stolen everything else in this country. They also have appointed some ANC-aligned people in the IEC. And there's been huge concern for decades over the fact that many of the people who are presiding officers in the IEC are school teachers who are aligned to SATU. SATU has not only destroyed education in this country, but they destroy the outcomes of elections. But, you know, the beauty about what's happening in this country now is that we're not such a homogenous political organization anymore. I mean, they're political people from new parties from everywhere. So when we have party voting agents in a voting station in a deep rural area of Ciskei or Transkei or KwaZulu-Natal, they aren't all ANC aligned. So everybody's watching each other. It's going to be very difficult to steal an election in South Africa. But the ANC will do everything they can. But we, as South Africans, have been in this movie before. We know what to do. And I think we'll be able to control those elections.
So when people tell you that they are leaving the country because they've had enough, they're gutful, they're going to find a new home, be it in Namibia, the UK, Canada, Australia, US, where many of our South Africans are now living. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, you know, I think a lot of people who leave South Africa have to justify to themselves why they're leaving. The reality is we live in a global village. So, you know, people move all over the world where their economic opportunities, they take them. You know, I have two children. My greatest fear is that I'll, you know, have grandchildren somewhere in another part of the world and I won't get to see them often. I have two children. I have a son who has two kids. He lives in South Africa. I have a daughter who's not married who lives in Amsterdam. She is a chartered accountant. She's a bright person. She's got a great job there. I'm sure she'll come back to live in South Africa. So they haven't emigrated yet. So, you know, I really feel sad for South Africa that we've lost some of our best people that have gone because they're hurtful or they're fearful or whatever it is. I still believe that there are enough people in this country to make this country work. And, you know, we have freedom of choice. So if people leave, they must leave. But I think we as politicians should do everything in our power to retain our citizens and make them feel comfortable in their home country and they don't feel obliged to leave. If people want to leave because they want to leave, they should be free to do that. But people shouldn't be obliged to leave because they fear for their futures. And that's where we are in South Africa. I think the main job for politicians, responsible politicians and leaders, is to create an environment where South Africans feel safe, that they want to invest and we can attract foreign investment so we can grow our economy and provide opportunities for people who've become dependent on the state. Over 30 million people depend on the state. And it's not as if the state's giving them a king's ransom. The state's giving them peanuts, but they're dependent on the state. And I think that is a situation that has been crafted almost by design by the ANC, because that gives them a hold over people's lives directly. You know, people fear the fact that they might lose 350 rand a month. I remember an old lady saying to me in the Transkei, you know, are you going to give us grants as Action SA? And I said to her, well, you know, what kind of grant do you want? Because in early 90s, there was only one grant. It was an old age grant. And then there was a child support grant. Then there was an unemployment grant. And now there's a COVID grant of 350. I said, what grant do you want to tell your grandchildren that they can look forward to that's going to make them happy? All those grants are getting less and less and less in value. They cannot sustain a person for a month. They can't even sustain them for a week, let alone a month.
Extraordinary. I guess on the other hand, politicians like yourself or lawmakers like yourself, and I love that idea of being a politician by conviction rather than by career, need to make the country deserving of bringing back all of those who've left here, all the skills who could make a big difference. But perhaps just to close off with, Athol, 2024, let's just say that the ANC does get a thrashing and that there is a coalition government, of which Action SA would be obviously a part, that takes over. How will the country change?
Well, first of all, Alec, let me just tell you, the thing that I worry about most is that many people in this country say to me, what will happen if Cyril has to resign or step down? What will happen when the ANC leaves? They have a fear of the future. I do not fear future because I see Action SA as part of the future. What I fear is every day that Cyril and the ANC are still in power. That's what I really fear, because they are destroying this country and we need something new. So I think what will change essentially after 2024 is that there will be a rebooting of what is expected from government, what is expected from people in political leadership, and that people will be more demanding and not simply accepting. You know, we went through a period of political change or metamorphosis where people were accepting, you know, they said, well, there's a new dispensation. We must just accept it. There's transformation and, you know, all of the things that go with it. And it's that classic story of the frog in the pot of boiling water that's getting warmer and warmer. You don't really feel it until it gets critical. We are at a critical situation now. So I think there will be a realignment of what the public want. And one of the things that attracted me to Action SA is that we demand very strongly ethical leadership. And it's one thing that I talk to Herman Mashaba a lot about. And we are determined that where we encounter any kind of leadership that is not ethical or exemplary, that we are going to act very strongly against those people. So we want to try and offer South Africans people that are going to put South Africans first and that they're not going to look after themselves first. And I look, it's a huge challenge. And there will be political opportunists. As they see that our party grow, they'll jump from the one ship to the other. And we just need to be very discerning. And then, you know, the other thing is, Alec, I was never a mayor. I mean, I've never been a mayor in my life. And when I became the mayor, I was, you know, a bit like the proverbial Jack Russell that had caught the bus. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I just had to sit and think to myself, you know, how am I going to do this job? And I remember telling my colleagues and I telling the administration that was pretty much completely ANC aligned. I said, we're going to run this ship or this municipality like train tracks. That is the metaphor that came to my mind. I said, train tracks are perfectly parallel, kept that way by massive sleepers and big bolts, because if the tracks come together, you have a derailment. And if they come apart, you have a derailment. So I made a commitment that we'd keep the politics out of the administration on condition that the administration kept out of the politics. And you know, within 1 year, we went from being the second worst municipality to the second best municipality. So I can only believe that concept of running a government where there's a separation between politics and administration, where you haven't got politicians meddling with tenders and making sure that their buddies get it and that kind of thing. The administrators, the civil servants responded magnificently because they were being allowed to be professional and do their jobs the way they wanted to or were supposed to be doing it without interference of politicians. So I know that we can run this country well, even if people come into office that have never held office before. You know, there are people in the ANC. Let me give you one classic example. The Minister of Education, Angela Motshekga, has been their Minister of Education for more than 10 years. I can't remember how many more, but way more than 10 years. And our education system is one of the worst in the world. We spend more per capita on education than any other developing nation in the world, and the outcomes are the worst. How does somebody like that stay in government? So experience doesn't mean anything in politics. If you have the right idea, you have the right convictions, and you're ethical and you're honest, you can do the job.
Ethel Trollip is the chairman of Action SA in the Eastern Cape, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.